So you're listening to Free 103.9. This is Ecotone Radio. It's Thursday morning. We're sitting here with Ty Bertrand, who is sound mixer extraordinaire, field recordist, musician, former member of Calito Verde. Just general, all about ears around the world. And we're listening today to some field recordings that he has made in Pakistan, that I made in Pakistan, and some random bits of different music from that part of the world. The last thing we heard was Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. There's a piece called Mera Yet Chirka. Right now we're listening to some people tuning up. Do you want to tell us what where some of these recordings we're going to hear come from?
I just want to say thanks for inviting me to the show.
Thanks.
Great
for
idea. Anyways, I always thought it was so weird that both of us happened to go to Pakistan for sort of sound recording jobs. And when I got called to go, which was end of 06, of course I was like, should I even go or not? I wanted to, but calling you and like then, you know,
right,
you were like, it was okay. So.
Right. And particularly in Lahore, I think the scene is different.
I knew, yeah, that was what I was told as well. So I basically went to Lahore for 6 weeks for a independent film shoot. There were four guys from New York, two of the guys I knew, and they kind of invited me and got me on board for this project. And, of course, I knew it'd be a good opportunity to check out some music. So I brought a mini disc player, and then I had my sort of hard disc recorder for this field recordings.
Right. We can give a little big up to Sound Devices. They're a good
totally,
company.
Totally. Well, and then I also brought my mini disc, which, of course, people still make fun of.
Right.
And I always bring, like, a transistor radio when I travel and listen to local radio, and then I can record it to the mini disc.
Right. We'll hear some of that in the later half of the show.
Cool. This stuff right here, this is, like, just a loop of a small segment of the Mazars, which are the Sufi shrines.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about Lahore because I was only in Lahore. We were there for 6 weeks. It was my first and only time in Pakistan. And on Thursdays, the Sufi Mazars, which are the Sufi shrines where various Sufi saints were, you know, said to have spent a lot of their time, usually in just one place. And then generally, it's considered that they died in that place, so then eventually a mazar is built. And depending on the followers of that particular Sufi saint, if he, you know, is more like a man of like the peasant folks, maybe the mazar is not particularly fancy. There's, you know, Sufi saints that have maybe bigger sponsors, so they have like really incredible, you know, mosques or whatever.
Right.
So we went, the film that I worked on was a narrative fictional story about two cousins, and one of the boys becomes obsessed with Sufism upon returning back to Lahore, Pakistan from studying film in the States. And it's loosely based on the filmmaker, this woman, Aisha Khan. It was her story loosely based on like some of her experiences, and
right,
a big part of it was the Sufi shrine. So on Thursday they play music and we'd go and we'd scout some and we'd record at some, but they were all different. Like some were very basic, some were like almost like a party spot, like if the biggest drummer in town plays at one mazar like every Thursday, it can be like a hip thing and people go, and maybe it starts really late. And
isn't the colloquial term for these bands Qawwali Party?
Yeah, but some of them are, you know, most of the stuff I brought today is from this one spot where we shot at, and we liked it a lot, and we happened to have a Thursday off one Thursday, and I went back there because we were told by the people that they would have really good music, and that one was more of a family-style spot.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool, because some of the places, when there are a lot of people there, it gets really freaky and weird. Like, it's, you know, a lot of it's devotional music. People are smoking hash, so...
Right. People really lose their minds.
Yeah, they get really carried away with it. And it was never, like... I didn't feel like they were dangerous, but, like, they get overcrowded or, you know, it's... like, the family spot was nice because we were not perceived so much as, like, you know, outsiders. Like, we were completely, when we arrived, we had filmed there before and we met a lot of people and people were really nice. So just on this one day off, myself and one of the other guys, Carlos, who was working on the film, we went and I brought my recorder and he took some pictures, and it was one of my favorite days during that whole 6 weeks. Just as soon as we got there, they put wreaths of flowers, like kind of like Hawaiian leis, on our necks. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't know we were coming. They just saw us. They recognized us. It was very unusual for us to be there. And strangely, they had set up, there's these giant washing stations. When you go into the mosques, you know, there's an outside ground that's usually kind of paved with tile or marble, and you take off your shoes before you go in. So everyone's walking around barefoot or in socks. And there's a massive washing station. I forget if it's co-ed. We didn't really use the washing station, but that's where the band was set up playing. Right. Like, was you know, and we walked over there, and everyone made a space for us and let us sit down, like, in right in the middle. And, you know, even though it was crowded, they would make room for us. They saw that I was recording, so they were very respectful. I let, like, some of the younger kids, like, listen to the recordings, and they, you know, it was pretty... I'm sure they, you know, have Walkmans and stuff, but it's still kind of fascinating for them that I was doing it live.
Right.
Like, they go every week. It's not a big deal.
Right. Yeah, when I was there, we went to a place called Faisal Mosque, which is the largest mosque in Asia. And there were probably 10,000 people there.
And were you in Lahore, too?
No, this is in Islamabad. This mosque has these incredible towers, four towers on the outside of it, and the CIA, for a certain period of time, thought that they were disguising ICBMs in there.
Crazy. Like, they were big minarets, and they thought they were, like...
Which is, like, only in Pakistan kind of story. But the thing that blew my mind about that, I mean, it was an incredible service in general. It was like Friday services. But just to watch 10,000 people work out the shoes that they had all taken off.
Right. It was incredible. A giant operation.
Well, yeah, everyone did it, and it was mellow, and everybody got their shoes. It was like, it was just a bizarre moment of cooperation on a mass scale.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's hear some music. You want to do this? Let's do this longer one first, this 20-minute one.
Sounds good. I'll say one more thing. This particular this set of recordings from Miamir Mazar, there were two or three different groups, and it was kind of nice. They each do a set, and each one seemed to be kind of led by generally a vocalist.
Right, right. I think that's generally the dynamic.
Occasionally a drummer, but
Let's talk actually about the instrumentation.
Good idea.
Yeah, it's usually one harmonium player or multiple harmonium players, because I've never actually seen this music played live.
I think in some cases, again, when we would go on Thursdays, if you went to, the thing was Aisha, who was in charge of things and had grown up in Lahore, she was trying to bring us specifically to different ones. And some, it was really a late night thing and, like, you know, a little edgier. And some, again, it was just like this family afternoon thing. And also the places being different, the bands also were kind of different. But generally, it could be a couple harmonium players, a couple tabla players. Do you know any of the other drums? Because I don't know, like, something like a frame drum.
There's different words in Hindi and Urdu for them.
Right.
But yeah, so it's generally a couple of drummers, a harmonium player, and then a bunch of singers, like eight to ten people.
A lead guy, maybe, and then a chorus. And
right.
And a lot of times the musicians are also part of the chorus.
Right.
And then, furthermore, again, this was different at certain places, but the hotter parties would have, if you want to call it a party, it was predominantly men. Actually, there was always some women. It wasn't like groups of, you know, girls. It was like, you know,
women there with their husbands,
a wife, daughters, you know. But the men, some of the guys would dance. Usually they're younger. They almost look like ravers.
Was the music amplified?
Yes.
Yeah, the vocals are amplified.
Yeah.
And everything is mic'd.
Sometimes they've got a bunch of mics lying around.
Because I noticed little music I did hear, there was definitely a hell of a lot of reverb they were putting on the sound systems, which
I
enjoy.
Totally. Well, it was weird. Not Miamir, one of the other more obscure places we went to, in behind the guys, they had the Lion of Judah thing.
Oh, wow.
Which was clearly, it was sounding kind of dubby, you know, and it was reminding me of like reggae stuff.
Yeah.
And like, you know, toasting on the mic, the way the guys would talk and chant and whatever.
Like the host. The
yes.
Host. Yeah.
And then at this one place, they had the Lion of Judah thing, and I'm like, okay, so this is some pre-partition, like, it
yeah, because the Sri Lankan flag looks like the Lion of Judah.
Yeah, somehow yeah. got appropriated from the English, who appropriated from the Africans or whatever. But, so, it's kind of interesting, like, when you hear the music, you'll, you know, it'll become apparent to a lot of people, like, particularly this one section, I don't even know where it is in these recordings, when there's a guy on the mic and it's very dubby and it sounds like a sound system.
Yeah. Well, cool. Okay, so let's listen to, should we do this 20, this one as long as 25 minutes? Let's do this
one. If that's the first one, yeah, let's do that, because okay. probably shorter things are more tuning up.
Let me just say while this is warming up here that some of these recordings are pretty rough. We're going to leave in, you know, I think we'll get some mic hitting here. But.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to go through all of them and pick out what's what.
But, so it's a little rough and ready.
Ah!
Into that one, but that was this is all from the same day, these recordings.
It was just like an afternoon. This particular one, it started at maybe 4 or 5 o'clock and
right.
just went till like dark, basically.
Right.
Some of the other ones are the things only start at 11 o'clock
at
like,
night,
2-3 in the morning.
Wow, that late, really?
Well, one of the first ones we went to on this trip, we were generally we were all staying at the same house together, which was kind of the shoot house in a sort of a military suburb of Lahore. And one night, the first time we got to go to a mazar, we were driving around one night. I think we were looking at a location, had dinner at a location in sort of the former red light district, which is now this like sort of artsy hip area.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lahore being
interesting to hear you talk about Lahore like that, because Islamabad and Peshawar, there's no just the notion of hip in either of those two
right,
places is crazy.
Right, or to say that there's a red light district
right.
that everyone knows about. Like,
I mean,
Peshawar
is like going back in time 200
right.
years.
Totally different kind of thing. But Lahore being right on the border with India was always sort of a cultural center.
Right.
We even went to there were two giant old studios, film studios, where they would make a lot of Bollywood films pre-partition. Post-partition, they started calling it Lollywood
right,
for Lahore.
Right.
So Lahore is definitely more of a cultural sort of folkloric. I mean, it's probably, what, the third or fourth biggest city over there in Pakistan?
It's pretty. I'm not sure what the biggest. It actually might be the biggest city.
But I mean, like
Karachi
and Islamabad are like the two big
Islamabad,
sort of political.
Nobody lives in Islamabad.
No.
Islamabad is basically just. It's
Isn't
like
that the capital?
It is, but it's this weird Orwellian.
It's the fake capital.
It's all built post partition, the whole city. There's a
right.
city called Rawalpindi that
yep.
it's right next to, which is actually where Benazir Bhutto was just killed at,
right.
at a rally in Rawalpindi.
Right.
We should actually also say that, at least since I've been there, like the part of the world that the part of the country that I was in, if I there's no
Can't
way
go
I could
there.
Go there now.
I
like,
talked to Aisha today, just happened to call. I hadn't talked to her in like a year, completely coincidentally called. And I was asking about some of the actors in the film, and like one of the guys was her cousin, and like Bilal was one of the other actors, and he was saying, you know, even when we were there, there was all kinds of stuff happening, like bombings and whatnot and fighting. But now it's even worse, like you said. It's just, you know.
Things are really coming to a head there.
Yeah. I mean, when we were there, was the riots with the lawyers were just starting to happen.
Right.
And then, you know, as you know, like, later it just got worse because basically they were trying to get Musharraf to relinquish, you know, having both the presidency and like head of the military, which is technically illegal.
And he was going about it by basically oppressing all right wing elements of the judiciary.
Right.
Which obviously hasn't worked out so well for him as a strategy.
No.
All right, so let's get on to another one. We have a shorter one here.
This is probably a different group. Like I said, there were two or three different groups.
Okay.
And, it really felt like just some kind of, like, wedding sort of vibe. Like, everyone, it was very family-oriented on this particular day. It was like everybody knew each other, and it's also, like, really celebratory kind of music. And they're just celebrating their particular saint. So these different mazars you go to, some of the music sounds similar, but they're singing about their... Sometimes there's more than one Sufi saint at a particular mazar. There might be two or three, and they're buried right there on the property. You can see their graves. And, another thing is, I was talking about the first night we went to one really late. When you get to these spots, generally there's a whole scene out front, and there are some devotees who actually are basically like homeless guys. They live in and around the shrine. And another thing that happens on Thursdays is wealthy people come and they drop off food on Thursdays because they know that's like kind of the gathering day. So the families are either visiting to pay their respects and sort of participate in the music thing, or sometimes they just come by and it's almost like an offering and like a, you know, good karma thing. They bring food. And so the first night when we went to one of the ones, it was some spot that our driver knew about. At the house where we stayed, there was a driver, there was a cook, and there was a sort of a security guy that watched the gate. They were all great characters. The driver we spent the most time with, because he would take us out to places. So he wanted to show... he brought a couple of the guys that we were with by one of these spots. When we got there, the front section was basically a dirt field. And in the front, in the outer area, before you actually enter in, like where you can still have your shoes on, there'd be a bunch of people, and it was generally two drummers. It might be a couple sets, but they do like a duo thing, and it's totally different than the Qawwali or the Qawwali, like, you know, the Nusrat Ali Khan type thing.
Right.
The drumming thing, I have a little bit of that. I think you have some or no?
Well, I mean, we're going to play some recordings that I have of... There's like it's the tradition of horn bands on the subcontinent, and I have two recordings. One that's the Pakistani Navy band that I made when I was there, and then the other is a wedding band, which is like a marching band with a bunch of drummers and like a reed line, basically, like a lot of clarinets. A guy playing oboe was in this one.
Yeah, and I think some of that, it's interesting because that's more out of the military tradition, sort of derived, I would guess, from like, you know, the British Empire.
Well, I mean, it's definitely
there.
A colonial.
But then
influence.
It's like their own flavor, and it sounds like the stuff we'd listen to a little bit. It sounds, you know, like a gypsy marching band, basically.
Right, right. Yeah, the tonality is totally Central Asian, but the theory is Western.
Yeah, it's a cool mix.
All right, so let's listen to this other piece.
سردار کفن تے لکھ دے سا میرا دین ایمان فرید کے ساتھ
Yeah, so that got majorly dubbed, you're right.
At the end, yeah. I think that may have been like the end of their set, and it's like he probably said a small prayer, and then sort of obviously he was shouting out Pakistan. So I think technically we should be drinking some chai right now. That was a pretty routine.
Kava was where the part of the country I was in. But let me just say this, we are in no way experts on this music. This is just, you know.
Yeah. I'm just talking about like things that I picked up.
Observations. The one thing that actually really blew my mind there was the sheer amount of hash that everyone was smoking. I didn't grasp how high everyone in Pakistan is.
Yeah, it's I mean, you know, like,
because it's a dry country.
Well, right. Yeah, I didn't know that until I was about to go over there and found out it was dry. And people were like, don't worry, you can get bootleg liquor. But
people kept saying that to me, but I never saw any liquor there.
It took us, and of course the director, producer woman, as she's inviting me over, is this like, even asked me like on the phone, she's calling from Pakistan. She's like, well, what do you like to drink? I'll make sure we have whatever. And I'm like, beer.
Yeah.
When we got over there, it took us weeks and weeks to get beer. We kept asking for beer and finally, you know, they make beer in Pakistan. They make scotch in Pakistan.
Really?
Yet it's illegal. So it's available, I guess, for tourists. But since we weren't really there as tourists, it was more like we would have somebody from the crew's brother would like come and collect some money from us and then go out and get, you know, whatever, like, you know, a bottle of scotch or something. And Pakistani scotch is not good.
Generally, they make it for export? I guess they must.
Well, no, that's the thing.
Oh, they make it for like bootleg wealthy people.
I think it's for the military guys and all that. Because like, why would India, you know,
import scotch from Pakistan?
Or beer from Pakistan. Yeah. India has way better beers. Murray beer was the beer. And it came in giant bottles, which was kind of fun.
Really? I never saw anything like that.
I, it's obviously we don't have pictures here, but I'm sure you have all kinds of crazy pictures. When the guys got the beer, actually, I think it was this day that I went and I made this recording, because the cameraman, Sam Chase, and the gaffer, Gus, they went and hung out that particular day. They went to their camera department's village, mm-hmm. and got totally shit-faced. And at that film studio I was telling you about, there was this deaf cameraman guy. So the guy couldn't speak, and apparently he couldn't hear, but he was the funniest guy. They had all this video they brought back of him like imitating Mullah Jat and all these like sort of Pakistani like film heroes, and the guy had everyone on the ground, like it was so funny. And then when they came back and we came back, they had secretly gotten beer through these guys, like in the village connection or whatever. And they're like, we got a little surprise for you upstairs. We lived in this house for 6 weeks, and it was our producer director had rented it, and she rented it for a year. She did some pre-production, then when we got there, she kind of had it set up, and I basically stayed. We had the whole upper floor to ourselves, which was cool, although we were shooting in these rooms, so half the time.
It was also the location you were shooting, right?
So half the time in our bedrooms, I had this like middle room that wasn't even a bedroom. I got stuck with this like middle room. Sam and Gus both got their own bedrooms that actually had doors, so they had mm-hmm. like a little bit of privacy. They had bathrooms in their bedrooms, and I would just, you know, use those. But I had this middle room where you'd have to pass through my room, and I had a mat on the floor. I had my transistor radio that I mentioned, and you know, a few other things. It was really fun, and you know, shit. Lost my train of thought.
It's all right.
Anyways, so yeah, we would just hang out up there and like, you know, try to fucking have fun, because most of the time we were working and like we couldn't go do anything, you know, like it was dangerous for us to go by ourselves into the city. So we never, one day I went on out for a walk with Gus, and we happened to have a day off. Oh, I was telling the beer story. So I go up to my little mat on the floor, and there's like, you know, 24 giant bottles of Murray beer on my bed.
Yeah.
So then like Sam jumps on my bed with all the beer, and then we're taking pictures of us with the glorious beer, and then we drank all the glorious beer, and the rest is history.
That would have been good when I was there.
When we were shooting too, like I was saying, so our rooms were kind of like the sets. So they used every room in the house to shoot in, and you know, it's like doubling for different locations and whatnot. And of course, we shot exterior, some interesting places like the Mazars, but a lot of times we're at the house.
Right.
So it was like production 24 hours a day, because after the day's end, it's like there were meetings for a couple hours. They, you know, of course, were scrambling every day to like have the next day set up. We would have like 40 guys show up at the house, you know, the grip and electric department with a giant Jenny truck. The camera guys were cool. They'd come on a motorcycle. I had
these are all local people.
A local guy. Some of them worked in, you know, there's a small industry. They do commercials, they do their TV shows, they do not as many films as they used to, but they do do films. So, you know, these guys would show up at the house, and the woman who rented the house, Aisha, never told the people what she was up to. So it was almost like this weird taboo thing. Like, across the street, you've got houses with, like, armed guards, because, again, it's a military suburb. So we're in this cul-de-sac, like this little dead-end street, and all this activity is going on. So sure enough, eventually, somebody comes over to find out what's going on, because, you know, single Muslim woman at house, 50 guys, 40 guys.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of disturbing to the neighbors. As a matter of fact, we had a soccer ball we'd play with out in the front. There was a little front yard and a very small backyard area. And we'd play in the street occasionally. And the third time we kicked it over the neighbor's wall, they just completely ignored us. Like, they just wouldn't give us the ball back, because they're, you know, after the third time, they're like sick of us kicking into the yard.
Right.
You know, we had probably alienated the neighbors, and, like, you know, there's just too much activity going on over there at all hours.
Right.
You know,
that's hilarious.
It was pretty funny.
When I was there, I was in, actually, you talk about the industry, I was there on a documentary about a guy named Hashim Khan, who is he was the first person after partition to win any kind of international sports title. And he's a squash player. He's in his 90s now.
Who's the guy that was kind of gaining political clout? Him or no?
That would be, I think, Jahangir Khan is the other big star. But I don't know if he got any political. I don't know what his situation is politically.
Right.
I watched him play when I was in Islamabad. In Islamabad, I was there. I was in Pakistan for 3 weeks, and I was in Islamabad for one at the World Championships of squash, basically.
And that must have been interesting.
Well, I mean, it is, if you know, but for 10 hours a day for 7 days,
yeah.
I definitely, like, covered every facet of it.
Was it really a local, like, Pakistani thing, or was
it
international?
Teams from all over the world were coming and playing, like, all the big squash teams were coming.
Right.
But
did you meet the coach guy that killed in Jamaica?
No, I mean, I didn't meet him.
Remember, that was, like,
he was the Pakistani coach. He was the Pakistani.
Oh, he
might have
been cricket.
He
Not
was
squat.
Cricket. You're right. He was cricket.
Scratch that.
Which I did learn to play a little bit there. That was like the street. Because my point is that they were shooting B-roll of the games all day, so there was no sound for me to do, really. And I would end up hanging out with the other cameraman that were there, and none of them had sound guys. So I would just, whenever they had to do an interview, I'd just be like, oh, I'll just plug in and I'll do sound for you.
And these were other guys not even involved in your crew.
This is like Pakistani TV. I would be hanging out, you know, smoking cigarettes with the guy.
Sure.
And just be like, oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, let me hook you up.
But
you might have met some of the guys I worked with. Maybe. Who knows?
But I have two recordings here. One is I'm sure you noticed there, the military controls everything. And all the sports stuff is done by the Navy for some reason. Or at least all the squash stuff is done by the Navy. And so the Navy,
Pakistani Navy,
were the hosts of this world championship of squash.
Did those guys have a boat? Like, where are they patrolling the Pakistani?
I have no.
Navy?
I mean, this is all. I think this was Navy and Air Force. It was. I was actually really impressed by how strapped they were, and like the show of force there. They have a very large military there.
Yeah.
But this one recording that we're gonna hear is of a Navy band. And again, this goes back to the sort of the horn tradition we were talking about. I think I'm not sure. I haven't heard this recording in a while, and this may not be the one I'm thinking of. But I do have a recording somewhere where they're playing.
But this will give you an idea of the flavor.
Yeah, but they're playing a piece, like a Western piece.
Oh, so you kind of recognize it.
But they're doing it. They're doing it in a very, you know what I mean? That things have been flatted in weird ways. Like the modality of it has been changed a little bit. So let's hear this. This recording starts a little abruptly. It doesn't.
So these guys were at the event.
Yeah. This is like the final day, like the celebration.
It really, it sounds so gypsy to me. It reminds me of those Amir Costa Rica films.
Yeah.
And, it's great.
So that's a recording from the of the, I believe I never actually heard their actual name, but I believe it's, you know, just the Pakistani Air Force marching band.
That wasn't a wedding.
No, we'll play that one next.
Oh.
That was at the squash tournament. That was like the final night of the squash tournament when the big matches were. They were outside when you left the courts. You'd walk out and they'd be playing all night.
Wow.
I actually had like hours of that.
Is the wedding thing from an actual wedding, or it's just
a wedding thing? Our hotel in Islamabad, every night there would be a wedding there.
Nice.
And a couple of, like, one Friday night, there was an immense band that followed them around.
Nice.
And these guys, that last recording, they were marching, and I was following them around, recording them. This next recording, I'd had a constant experience of, and I've had this experience trying to do field recordings in general around the world, where I'll hear something and then I'll run to get my gear and I'll try to get in the right position, and by the time I'll do that, whatever moment I'm trying to capture is gone. So I was feeling neurotic that was going to happen with the wedding band thing, so I just stuck a mic. I was sitting in my hotel room and I just stuck the mic out the window. So it's definitely like not the most accurate recording ever.
Right.
But
you couldn't be like a wedding crasher and just show up and be like, I'm with the...
Well, they were running all around out in the streets, and it was a scene. It was like a big, 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 big scene. I also think I didn't have my... it was something like maybe my gear wasn't handy. I just had to grab, cobble together whatever I had, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, let's listen to this wedding band. These guys were insane. It was
the
like
wedding band?
It was, they were just, their energy level was unbelievable.
They were, what, like in a courtyard kind of thing?
No, it was like out on the street in the front of the hotel.
And people were dancing in the street?
Yeah, like hundreds of people were out and just like, you know, going ballistic.
Cool. Partying. So we might even hear that like in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, so let's play this.
Thank you.
You're listening to Free103.9.org. This is Ecotone Radio. So we're going to segue into some radio recordings now. That's what this is.
Can we re-cue it? This track.
Yeah, let's re-cue it.
Yeah. ऐसा हूँ तेरे बिन बिखरा हुआ काजल आँखों में बिखरा हुआ काजल आँखों में तूफान की हलचल सांसों में ये नरम लबों के खामोशी ये नरम लबों के खामोशी पलकों में छुपे हैरानी से तेरे भीगे बदन की खुशबू से लहरें भी हुई मस्ताने से का हुआ ये जिस्म का चंदन महका हुआ इल्जाम न देना फिर मुझको इल्जाम न देना फिर मुझको हो जाए अगर नादाने से बिखरा हुआ काजल आँखों में बिखरा हुआ काजल आँखों में तूफान की हलचल सांसों में ये नरम लबों के खामोशी ये नरम लबों के खामोशी पलकों में छुपे हैरानी से तेरे भीगे बदन की खुशबू से लहरें भी हुई मस्ताने से बिखरा हुआ काजल आँखों में बिखरा हुआ काजल आँखों में तूफान की हलचल सांसों में ये नरम लबों के खामोशी नरम लबों के खामोशी पलकों में छुपे हैरानी से तेरे भीगे बदन की खुशबू से लहरें भी हुई मस्ताने से को छू कर आज हुए खामोश हवा दीवाने से खामोश हवा दीवाने से सदब की पसंद पर आपने सुना मिथि हसन को। हाँ जनाब, फायजा ने नारंग मंडी से बहुत लंबा चौड़ा मैसेज भेजा है, लेकिन मतलब यही है कि खुशी और गमी दोनों में, मुसीबत और राहत, हर वक्त अल्लाह ही का नाम लेना चाहिए। बेशक उसी के नाम से इब्तदा भी करें और उसी के नाम पर इख्तिताम भी करें। अच्छा, अब जनाब झरोका मीर का तस्कीन उसकी तब हुई जब चुप मुझे लगी, मत पूछ कुछ सलूक मेरे बस जुबान का। अभी जरा मले गुलाम रसूल हैं लाइन पर, इनके बाद मजीद अशार मैं आपको सुनाऊंगा। जी अस्सलाम वालेकुम।
सब हुए नादिम पे तदबीर हो जाना समेत, सब हुए नादिम पे तदबीर हो जाना समेत, तीर तो निकला हमारे दिल से लेकिन जान समेत।
वाह 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 वाह।
अभी आपने इमाम गजल मीर तकी मीर का जिक्र किया तो मैंने कहा कि मैं एक शेर और एक गजल सुना दूं उनकी।
जनाब जरूर।
हाँ जी, वो हस्ती अपनी हुबाब की सी है, ये नुमाइश शराब की सी है, नाज की उसकी
नाजुकी उसके लब की क्या कहिए,
पंखड़ी एक गुलाब की सी है,
पंखड़ी एक गुलाब की सी है जी।
बार बार उसके दर पे जाता हूँ, बार बार उसके दर पे जाता हूँ, बार बार उसके दर पे जाता हूँ, हालत अब इस तरह की सी है। और मैं जो बोला कहा कि ये आवाज, मैं जो बोला कहा कि ये आवाज, उसी खाना खराब
खराब की सी है।
मीर उन नीम बाज आँखों में
सारी मस्ती शराब की सी है।
ये तो थी जनाब मीर तकी मीर की गजल। और अगर आपकी इजाजत हो तो एक आध नगमा सुना दूं।
जी सुना दीजिए ना।
जिंदगी अपनी गुजर जाएगी आराम के साथ, जिंदगी अपनी गुजर जाएगी आराम के साथ, अब मेरा नाम भी आएगा तेरे नाम के साथ, जिंदगी अपनी गुजर जाएगी आराम के साथ। मैं तेरे
साथ। Take over the mix here a little bit.
Yeah.
What have we been listening to?
That was just stuff I think I mentioned earlier. Generally, like if I'm going to go somewhere interesting, I bring a radio and listen to like local radio.
Right.
As opposed to just bringing an iPod and listening to all the crap I listen to generally.
In the States.
But I will always bring a mini disc, and then I just output out of the radio into the mini disc, and I'll try to record some stuff. And in Pakistan, you know, that was entertainment for us in the evening after we're done working. Post dinner, we'd sit around and, like, you know, generally we'd have the radio on. And a lot of times the programming, they were playing really good stuff. I mean, I think there were some rock stations. There was a kind of a mix of stuff, and you know, it was a lot of local stuff, a lot of Indian stuff. And in general, in Pakistan, I know for films, they're not allowed. In Pakistan, they don't show Indian films, or at least they're not supposed to. Of course, you can buy all the DVDs in the black market and all the music on the black market. And on the TV, it's a lot of Indian programming. But as far as films, it's almost like they feel like by blocking the Indian films, they'll promote making Pakistani films. I mean, everyone's still obsessed with the Indian culture because it's there's more of it, and, you know, they're great at it, and, you know, they know
all
this stuff.
It's a much more populous country.
Yeah. But so for radio, a lot of this stuff, it sounded to me, for the most part, like a lot of old classic, like Bollywood type stuff, which was great. I mean, it was really cool. You know, you heard a few different things there at the end. I don't know what that, like...
I like that guy singing.
There was the Kenny G moment.
And well, then, he came in all like grown and sexy. Like,
yeah. Oh, the guy, the caller. Night. The caller.
Just the MC, he came on and was like, this is the late night show.
Right, right. There was one female DJ who we loved listening to. Like, obviously, we knew nothing about her, but she was on this one. There were like two stations we liked, and we would listen to her a lot. It was very comforting because there weren't a lot of women around us. Can't really interact with the girls over there.
I'm familiar.
Yeah.
With the masculinity of the overwhelming masculinity.
Yeah. But so, you know, in the arts in general, like there was some theater people we met, you know, because we were there making a film. So, of course, like the arts thing comes together. But music is probably the most important outlet. I would think being a painter there or, you know, any of the arts are supposed to be like kind of reflecting the traditional thing. It's just, you know, the whole, you have the military repression, the religious repression, and then there's even like this family kind of aspect where you basically, you're really, it's, you know, as an adult male, when you get married, your wife moves into sort of the family compound typically, so you're still kind of under like the family authority thing. So it was rare. There were a few people who we met who lived independently of their family. Maybe they, you know, and I'm talking like people in their 30s or 40s, maybe they, you know, their family lived in another part of the country. But in general, you know, those factors like the military, the religion, government, and family pressures, it's just not promoting a lot of like sort of art and freedom and expression. It's more like, you know, repressed basically.
Yeah.
But music, you know, the radio is like a big thing for them, and you know, they definitely love music, and I like the stuff too. I wasn't sure even the first time they brought me around. I knew the drumming was going to be interesting. My brother had like played a lot of stuff for me before, and you know, like living in New York, obviously you get a taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the music, I really liked it. I thought it was kind of catchy, and like I liked the whole the exuberance. You know, I thought it was going to be more serious and somber.
Yeah.
But it's like really jubilant and joyous and devotional. And like, so you get caught up in it. And it was cool. Like, I wasn't sure if people were going to be staring at us and like, you know, uncomfortable with us being around. In general, it wasn't a problem.
Right.
You know, we didn't really run into much problems. Now, who knows?
Yeah. Well, let's listen to this last piece from the Mazar, or at least a piece of this piece.
So this would be, the last crew that came in. They were really good. A different singer, slightly different style. But definitely exuberant.
Sun to parde mera.
So we should talk a little bit about, first of all, this is Free 103.9 you're listening to. This is Ecotone Radio. Today on our show we have Ty Bertrand, international man of mystery, sound mixer, musician. We're listening to some tapes that he's made on a trip to Pakistan not so long ago, and looking at some stuff I made when I was there. We're actually going to play one cut from... you want to talk about a little bit about Carlito Verde?
Carlito Verde is like a long-term project that is sort of defunct now, although I shouldn't say that because it's...
You never
Carlito
say never.
Verde will never die.
Right.
But it was... the main period was over... Shit. Like 90, I don't even want to say dates because
okay,
I don't know. But
yeah.
it was an ongoing New York City-based project. Myself playing mainly bass and electronics. Dave Reed on guitar. Tony Rohr doing a lot of programming and other assorted things. And then this guy Adam Butler is doing a lot of keyboard work. And
right.
We...
And Tony's moved on to do more techno stuff. You
yeah, Dave,
do this East Coast orchestra thing sometimes.
Dave Reed is in Vancouver at an undisclosed location. He lives on a secret houseboat in a lab that's floating in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And Adam Butler right now is down in D.C., but we all stay in touch and try to work on stuff still. But this stuff we would meet on a regular basis. We'd play out once in a while, and generally it was just a music project for us to get together and make music and put out some recordings and, you know, drink beers.
Right, right. And then now, what's the state of the East Coast Orchestra / East Coast
Duo? East Coast Duo, Jordan McLean of Antibalas fame and myself, we've known each other for a long time, and we're doing stuff here and there. It's
right.
Also kind of top secret, so
right.
You can't divulge
okay.
too
right.
much details. But, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about how these recordings were made in Pakistan.
Oh,
like what
basically,
the actual
I mean,
you
well,
with.
You mentioned tapes, so
well,
we were kidding about that.
Yeah.
But, I was over there recording for this film. I bought a hard disk recorder that you mentioned before, the Sound Devices hard disk recorder.
The 702,
and I had my, that just takes compact flash cards. I had my laptop, and then I had this mini disc player. But for the Mazar stuff here, I just brought the little hard disk recorder, which is pretty compact with, you know, a battery, and I used my my Sennheiser MKH-60, which is like standard film dialogue recording mic. But, you know, it's a great quality mic. And, especially this last set of recordings, like, it sounds incredible. It's just sitting on a little tripod in this
room. So you
weren't
actually booming it. You had it...
I had a little tripod
yeah.
thing. And, like, you know, I was trying to be discreet. I didn't even know some of the Mazars we went to, and they asked us to put away recording stuff when we were scouting different locations.
Yeah.
Because, like, one spot in particular, the drummer is kind of a superstar, and, like, his manager, de facto manager, was trying to control, like, you know, images of him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they were selling CDs and stuff. These guys at this Mia Mia Mazar wasn't like that at all. They get together and, like, you know, they rock hard, man.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
So let's check out some Carlito Verde, and then we are out. This is Ecotone Radio, Free 103.9. There'll be some photos from some of these places where these recordings were made on the blog. That can be found at www.ecotoneradio.blogspot.com. And, yeah.
What's the next show?
The next show will be, we have another guest, who's Maga Bo, who actually is similar, it'll be similar terrain. But Bo is also a location sound mixer who goes around the world, does a lot of field recording stuff, but he's also a hip-hop producer and collaborates with a lot of local talent, has a record coming out, and is here in New York City playing. He actually, I'm trying to think, by the time the show airs...
Where does he live normally?
He lives in Brazil normally.
Cool.
But I think by the time the show airs, the two gigs that he will be done, will be doing will have already happened.
Okay.
So not that this is not happening in real time. All right.